For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Today on Sticks In, the NLL playoff field is set after a absolutely bonkers final weekend. So we will talk about everything that happened to get the playoff field to where we are, the fate of everybody and where things stand. And then it is Tuesday, so we will look at the latest in the Inside Lacrosse media poll with our Tuesday Top 20, check in with the RPI a little bit as we are at the end of the regular season just about. This will be the last week of the college lacrosse regular season, and in some cases we have conference tournaments beginning this week. So, a lot to get through. Let's do it. Welcome back to the Sticks In Podcast. My name is Dan Arestia, and I'm happy you're here. Today is Tuesday. We have had quite the college lacrosse and pro lacrosse weekend. We have a postseason field set indoors. We have postseason starting to take shape in the college game outdoors. We have the PLL draft is rapidly approaching. We have about 2 weeks until that comes. I am trying to get myself allowed to cover that in person. We'll kind of see what happens there. It's still up in the air, but let's start indoors. Let's start with the NLL. We entered the weekend with five teams still alive for the postseason. Rochester, New York, Vancouver, Saskatchewan, and Panther City were fighting for two spots. Panther City had the inside track on one of them because they already had nine wins. Rochester had the slimmest chance of anyone. The stats folks put their odds to make the playoffs at about a 3% chance coming into the weekend. And that was because their scenario, they had one way in, only one way that they could make the playoffs. They had to win both their games twice in 3 days, Friday night, Sunday afternoon. And then they needed all those other teams I just mentioned to lose their games. Six exact outcomes. Rochester win, New York, Vancouver, Saskatchewan, Panther City loss. All six of those things happened. Friday night, Rochester won, and at that point, that basically puts Panther City in. A number of teams needed Rochester to lose exactly one game over the weekend. Everybody else basically needed Rochester to lose once. So as soon as Rochester won on Friday night, you knew this thing was coming down to Sunday. And then losses started happening. Saskatchewan had a tough assignment. Saskatchewan had to play Toronto, best team in the league, to stay alive. And they did not win. So the second they lost, they were eliminated. There was no scenario where an 8-win Saskatchewan team was making it. So when they lost by a goal on Saturday night, they were done. Vancouver was basically eliminated also as the Saturday results started coming in. So it came to Sunday. Rochester win and in. Rochester lose. Had they lost on Sunday, the New York Riptide would have made it. And that kind of presented like an interesting quandary to me. It was hard to know who to kind of to cheer for. Obviously, Rochester is a fun story because it's like I am frequently cheering for maximum chaos and anarchy in the standings. I always find that to be the most fun thing in sports. And so the most like chaotic thing to have happen would be Rochester winning twice and getting that crazy string of games to get in. So you're kind of pulling for that to happen just because it's fun. There's other things to that, too. They obviously have you know, they weren't in great form coming into the weekend, so they would have to turn it around. And then they got Violet Hartley back in net, which was a major factor on Sunday. They allowed three goals to Philadelphia on Sunday. On the other side of the coin, I was obviously pulling for New York a little bit. New York is the closest thing I have to a local team here in Connecticut, really. It's New York's final season because they're moving to Ottawa next year. So as of now, I don't have really a local team here in Connecticut. The closest NLL franchises to me now are Philadelphia and Albany. So no day trips really in there. There was also that you know, Jeff Teat has, again, like an insane statistical season. 58 goals. He led the league in goals. He's, you know, in the top, I think top two, top three in points. I believe Josh Byrne had the scoring title, but Teat was not far behind. But you just kind of get the feeling that Jeff Teat getting votes for the MVP, or like meaningful he could actually win the award votes for the MVP, might have hinged on the team actually making the playoffs. There are voters who will be like, if you're a losing team and you don't make the playoffs, then you can't really be the MVP. So I think that Riptide missing the playoff probably really hurts Jeff Teat's MVP chances. So you're kind of pulling for the Riptide to make it so Teat could be, you know, closer to the top of the MVP conversation. I will say, as a result of Rochester winning and Connor Fields having a baller weekend and absolutely tearing up Philadelphia in the clincher, Connor Fields is going to get some MVP love, I think. I think he and Nick Rose will be guys up near the top. I always wonder how much Dane Smith and Josh Byrne kind of work against each other because they're on the same team. Like, how do you separate them when it comes to MVP voting? It's like they kind of like split the vote for each other, but I've never been really good at working through that kind of stuff. I think, you know, Connor Fields, again, basically willing his team through the weekend to the postseason, definitely deserves a lot of love for the MVP. He was, I think, 6 or 7 goals back or something like that of Jeff Teat for the league lead. And by halftime, it was like he might catch him. He might actually overtake Jeff Teat for league leading goals. I think he came up 1 or 2 goals short, though. And I will do this. I don't want to do the pit one league against the other thing. That's not the point I want to make as I do this. But I do think that weekends like that one in the NLL, where people were at, you know, I was at the Riptide game. I was sitting there. You know, I was with Adam Levy and Ty Marrero was there too. But like, you know, people are watching the Riptide game. They're going to their phone to check what's going on in the other games. We're all right. If this score holds, if that, then we need this team to do that. Those are the most fun weekends, man. They're so great. They're so great. They're always great when it comes. The NFL seasons that come down to that kind of thing are always so much fun. You get just all this people just, you know, fan bases getting elated and heartbroken all at the same time. It's so fun. But you can't have that if everybody makes the playoffs. You know what I mean? The weekend that's insane, like that one, it only happens if you have several teams fighting for very few spots. NLL also, I mean, there's the obvious caveat here. NLL has a lot more teams than the PLL does, so it makes it a whole lot easier to do that. But just as the PLL adds teams, if and when they do add teams down the line, I hope that they keep the playoff field the same size as it is now for a while. Starting this year, it's going to be 6 teams. I hope they don't add another team until they're up at like 14 franchises, man. I want it to be battle for those spots. Coming down to the last week kind of stuff. NLL, 5 teams for 2 spots in 72 hours. Man, that was great. It was a ton of fun. And I think over the course of the year, basically everybody, just about every franchise, probably found something to be kind of happy about. Colorado, maybe not. Colorado had a rough year, man. From the finals to the bottom of the league in 1 year is remarkable. But, you know, if you're a Vancouver fan, the crowds in Vancouver through the second part of the year were great. Your young team matured like in the snap of a finger and went from 2-8 to 8-9 in the blink of an eye and alive for a playoff spot in the last week of the year. Owen Grant is going to be in the Rookie of the Year mix. I know it seems like an Alex Simmons, Thomas McConvey kind of race, Ty Kurtz kind of race. But Owen Grant's going to be in the mix there. Your defense has its cornerstone. Adam Charlin Beattie's, some people might not be. I am a believer in Charlin Beattie's as the guy that can be your team's top lefty. I really like the look of that Vancouver young core. And I don't know how you couldn't if you're a Vancouver fan. So I think, you know, even Vancouver, who spent a lot of the year at the bottom of the power rankings and the standings, and then just that charge through the second half was great. Panther City, I mean, if you're fans, please start showing up. The team's good. Please start showing up if you're in Panther City, if you're a Fort Worth fan, a Texas fan, whatever. You know, and us New York fans, obviously, we're sad that the Riptide are leaving. But, you know, you had to feel good about the season you got from Jeff Teat. You had that stretch in the middle of the year where you were the hottest team in the league. Everybody kind of had their moments, I think, over the course of the year to stuff to feel good about. I think the NLL had a really successful regular season, for sure. The playoffs start basically straight away. Games are this weekend. There's no, you know, you get the middle of the week off and that's it. The Nighthawks' reward for their remarkable final weekend and getting in on the last possible day is that they have a trip to play top seed overall Toronto Rock. Tough first assignment, but they're the first game of the weekend too. They play on Saturday afternoon. Saturday night, Georgia will visit Buffalo. That'll be a good one. That one's on ESPNU too. That's on linear. And then Saturday late night, the West Coast game, Panther City is visiting the two seed San Diego. And then Sunday you get one game. Sunday Halifax visits Albany. And that one is also on ESPNU if you're here in the States. I should say the Nighthawks Toronto game is on TSN if you're in Canada. All first round games are single elimination. And that makes things, obviously, the stakes very, very high. It's win or go home. If a top seed lays an egg, they show up not ready to play, or they have a terrible night, that's it. You're done. You don't get to bounce back. Doesn't matter what seed you were. If you stink the joint out in this one game, you're done. So, I mean, you take that, then you start asking, can Rochester stay hot after this weekend? Give Toronto a game? Can lower-seeded Halifax jump on this young Albany team that was not in great form down the stretch, knock off a three-seed? Can Georgia go into what will assuredly be an absolutely insane bandit land and win? I think they went in there and won this year already once. After this weekend, it's the semis. Kind of annoyingly, the NLL does not reseed, I don't think. I'm 99% sure that there's no reseeding. I kind of wish they did. I always prefer a playoff format where teams get reseeded from round to round so that after the first round, the best team remaining plays the worst team remaining in terms of seeding and so on, and you do that all the way through. But I don't believe the NLL does that, so you could have some interesting matchups depending on how upsets go, if we get any. Semifinals will go from May 2nd to May 5th and then into the next weekend if need be, because the semis are a best-of-three series. And then the finals are May 16 to 19. Again, going into the following weekend, if need be, for the three-game series. A cool thing that the NLL has done is that if both semifinals are only two games, if they both go 2-0 and that's it, the league will start the finals a week earlier, which will be great. If you're a fan of both leagues in particular, because you might even get in a situation where, forget overlap, you might actually have a little bit of a break. You might have a little bit of time to actually recover if you're an NLL player getting ready for PLL lacrosse. Can you believe it? And if you're a fan, the unable to travel list may be a thing of the past. We'll see. But from the NLL madness to the college madness that's rapidly approaching. I mean, I guess it's even here. We had some insanity this weekend. Well, let's go through the poll now, the top 20 here. This is just kind of a quick episode tonight, but we'll go through the poll here. We'll talk some results from the weekend as we go. The reason this is a little bit quicker is I had sat down to record and get my outline and my notes and stuff together. And I was like, all right, we'll spend a little time on conference tournament scenarios. But some of these, at the Patriot League in particular, my God, they are an adventure. So I'm gonna do the tournament, conference tournament scenarios for places where it's not set in stone yet. Like the Big Ten conference tournament is set, and the MAC conference tournament is set, but most other conferences are wrapping up this weekend. So I'm going to do scenarios for everybody, but I'm going to do it in writing because I feel like it's easier to digest. If I'm sitting here going, if BU wins and Army loses and Lehigh wins and Navy, it's impossible to follow. There's so many ways the Patriot League can go. It's much easier, I think, just to write it down and be like, all right, BU fan, here's what you need. And just go from there. No way it would make sense to just listen to. So if someone tried to explain it to me, I'd space it out like I was listening to somebody talk to me at a party about their fantasy team or something. It's just not something that commands attention. So keep an eye out for, I'm going to try and do it midweek, Tuesday, maybe Wednesday, conference tournament scenarios across the college landscape, because it's going to be an exciting week, starting, I think, with games on Friday. So let's just go on to the poll now instead. The top 20, as always, we will go through this in the order of my ballot and how I voted in the media poll, and then I will tell you where the team actually finished in the poll, and I'll give you what their RPI is at this point as well. Shout out, of course, as always, to Lax Reference, keeping the RPIs up to date, and their tournament scenario stuff, too, was great. So if you don't have a Lax Reference Pro account, you should have one. It's worth every cent. At number one, I got Notre Dame. Pretty easy. Keep the Irish at number one. They, of course, remain the unanimous top team in the land. They smacked Carolina this week. The caveat that Owen Duffy did not play for Carolina, but even if he did, to me, that UNC team looked pretty overmatched in that one. I know Notre Dame can do that to people, but it just felt like Notre Dame just could do whatever they wanted to on both ends, and UNC really didn't have answers. Kavanaugh boys cut him up pretty good. Devin McClain, I think, had a hat trick. The defense and Edelman were smothering people. So Notre Dame actually has the number two RPI right now. I believe they are narrowly behind Duke, who has the number one RPI. So kind of interesting there. Not that it matters. It's not like they're in danger of missing the tournament. But yeah, Notre Dame, easy number one. They are number one in the poll. They are number two in the RPI, last I looked. At number two, I have Duke. It wasn't a total no-brainer for me. It was pretty close, but not a total no-brainer. They didn't play this weekend. So you don't really, there's no reason to move them anywhere because there's no result to impact their standing. They're also two in the final poll. I wonder, though, given the results of the Cuse game in particular, if there were voters who had the orange at two, who have Syracuse at two. Syracuse has wins against UVA and against Duke. It certainly doesn't seem crazy to me for somebody to vote them into the two spot. I didn't ding Duke for not playing. Duke has the top RPI in the country, as we said. But I wonder how if I could see everybody's ballot, how many different places Duke wound up after a weekend where they didn't play and we had all those other big results. At number three, I got the Cuse. After that win, I moved them up to three. They now have wins over UVA, Duke, and Hopkins. I was between Hop and Cuse for this spot. I think you could easily keep Hopkins at three off the strength of their win. But Cuse has the head-to-head win over them, and that kind of swayed me a little bit here. The Orange resume is pretty great right now. I think they're 3-1 against... No, they're not 3-1 because Virginia dropped out. They must be 2-1 against the RPI top five. That's pretty great. Having those wins, a loss to Notre Dame... their resume is pretty incredible. The game itself this weekend, obviously electric. I had said I felt like it was like the perfect lacrosse game. The dome was roaring. That place was going nuts basically the whole time. Both teams just trading giant plays. At one point, Kark said the game was going to be first to 20 wins, and I think he was absolutely right about that. That was definitely the feeling of the game. Everything you could ask for, I think the game had it. I think if you wanted to try and find little things to nitpick about, but... Virginia's midfield to me isn't doing enough for them right now. UVA scored 17. They had of the 17, you had one goal for shuts. Terenzi had a goal. Colsey had two. That's the extent basically of the midfield scoring and no assists for those guys. You got 19 points from Schellenberger, Millen, and Cormier. So the attack group obviously is outstanding. There's nothing wrong with getting 19 points from those three guys. But when you play big games like this one in the dome or you play the big games down the stretch into May, you're probably going to need to find some more production than that from your midfield. So that's where you need to go to win matchups, basically. That's who's guarded by shorties. So you're going to need to get the offense moving with those guys. So for Cuse, I have to imagine it's been quite a long time since Bellina was held pointless. I don't know if it's happened in his college career before this game. And honestly, it's Schroeder absolutely was magnificent in that matchup. He was all over Joey in that matchup. As they mentioned, I think on the broadcast, those two have from the club circuit days on Dal have a longstanding, record of going against each other. But Spallina being pointless, the haters are always extremely loud about Joey Spallina. I really don't make much of this kind of thing. I just don't. I said it after Duke, too. The rest of that offense, they scored 18 goals. The rest of the offense was cooking. It wasn't like they needed Joey Spallina to force the issue and get on the board. They scored 18 goals. They won the game. Nobody on Cuse had more than 3 goals. Spallina didn't score, and they still won, and they got to 18 with nobody on the team having more than a hat trick. That's an offense that's just working. And a really good player knows how to be out there and not wreck the flow of that. And I think I said it after the Duke game, but I'll reiterate it, man. I think the particularly for a player like Spallina, who will play on a club team with a number of other elite players, it changes the way these guys are prepared for games like this at the college level. And what I mean by that is, before you had some of these loaded club teams or these elite kind of, you know, outside of your high school team programs, these guys just played for their high school team. And maybe the guy that was going to Syracuse was just the guy that was better than everybody. And so the high school coach said, give him the ball to dodge 50 times a game. And that's just the way he knows how to play, is I have to go make things happen. On these club teams, it just doesn't work like that. You play with other elite players all the time, and you learn when to defer and that it's okay to, even if you're a five-star, mega, number one ranked, whatever. If you're all that stuff, you still learn how to defer, because sometimes you do that. I think if it had come down to crunch time and Orange absolutely needed a goal in that game, if the roles were reversed and they were down 17-18 with seconds remaining coming out of a timeout, I believe Joey Spallina would have picked up the ball and had the, you know, had been the guy they asked to initiate the offense. But that's not how the game went. So, again, I don't read much into the, oh, he didn't score a ton against this team. They won the game, man. They won the game. That's all you could ask for. Cuse came in the final poll at number 4. So I guess maybe I rated this win a little bit higher than others. They're number 5, I think, in the RPI. But 3 is where I have the Orange. Spent a lot of time on that. Sorry. At 4, I have Hopkins at 4, which maybe feels a little bit wrong. You know, maybe there's some mental gymnastics I'm doing here. I'm working too hard on this. But they were 3 last week, and they beat Maryland. So how do you drop when you do that? That's a very fair question. And I think the only answer to that question is, well, Cuse beat Virginia and they beat you. So the Cuse win and their win over Hop puts the Orange, I mean, like the thinnest of margins, puts them at 3 and Hop at 4 for me right now. I think Hopkins really exposed how much of a weakness it is for Maryland to find guys who are consistently winning their individual matchup. There was just nobody out there for the Terps who could just run by their guy. Consistently, anyway. Hop can play that slow game if you want to. They can play the up-tempo game, too. Hop was ready for that kind of game. They looked ready for it. It was well-schemed. They were prepared for the game from 1998. By the way, you should read Jason Gay's op-ed in the Wall Street Journal about Hopkins being back, because they are, and it's a really good piece, but should read that. The locker room's going to tell you we never left. They probably did for a little bit there in a little while, right? Kind of. But they're legit. Hopkins is legit. They are 3 in the RPI. They are the Big Ten regular season champ. The attendance for the Hop Maryland game beat out Army-Navy. It was the most attended game in college ball this year. More than Army-Navy. 10,500-ish. So narrowly ahead of the Army-Navy game. But, man, that rivalry still got the juice. Putting 10,000 people in the seats, man. Gotta love to see that. At number 5, I have UVA. This match is where they came in at the final poll. So they drop a few spots here with the loss to Syracuse. They drop into a spot that was vacated by Maryland. Easy enough for me to kind of figure out this top 5 order as I did it. We talked about the game a little bit here already. I will say, I did the mock draft thing with Schellenberger going first to the Outlaws because of like fit, Sudo's style, team need, all that to say nothing about just how obviously off the charts good he is. But every week you watch him play, I think more and more he actually is. I think he's going to go first. I really think he's going to go first in the PLL draft. The play lately is just off the charts. As I mentioned, UVA not getting a ton from their midfield, or at least didn't this week. They have to lean even harder on Shelley in the attack. A whole stadium knows what's coming with him, and it doesn't matter. He had 9 points against the Cuse. He's up to the task every week because he does so many things with both hands. UVA and Notre Dame this week should be awesome. UVA, I think, is at 6 in the RPI. But for me right now, the ACC has 4 of the top 5 teams. That conference is really good. At number 6, I have the Terps, Maryland. They came in at 7. So I have them one spot ahead of where they fell to following the loss to Hopkins. I imagine there were some people that were quite upset at the way Maryland played lacrosse this weekend, turning back the clock a little bit, turning back the clock like 20 years. They did play a little bit of pre-shot clock era ball in this one. And I'll say this. Look, if you think coming into a game, you need to maximize your time with the ball so you can win and use entire shot clocks and take things slow, I get it. Shot clock or no shot clock, it is a viable strategy to play that way. Wins are wins. Last year, Denver played plenty of games real slow, leaning on a defense and an offense that ran hot and cold, more cold, but leaning on a really good defense and a face-off edge to dominate possession and play lower scoring games and control, control, control. There's nothing wrong with playing that way. It's harder with a shot clock, but you can still do it. That said, I don't know if Maryland has to do that. I know I just said they don't have a ton of matchup dominant guys, but Luke Weirman was 60% in this game. I don't think either hop option had a ton of success. If there's more faceoffs in that game, I believe Weirman's number goes up from 60. I think if you have that kind of edge facing off, there should be then an opportunity to play a little bit faster and rely on that face-off edge to keep your possession number high. Like, isn't that a legit strategy too? I'm not going to sit here at the desk right now and tell you I know better than John Tillman. I do not. I absolutely do not. I'm just saying the two things of play super slow with a giant face-off advantage, sometimes those things can feel at odds. Sometimes they work together. Sometimes yesterday, to me, it felt like there was an odds. I felt like Maryland could have played a little bit faster. But look, last year Denver played with the, we're going to play slow and win a ton of faceoffs and control the game. I don't think anybody was taking shots at Denver last year. But if they feel like that's their best chance to win, given their strength in goal, facing off, and on the defensive end, then I think it's fair to say that they can play that way. Terps have an RPI of 7. They are the 2 seed in the Big Ten tournament, so they get a bye into the semis there. At number 7, I have Denver. Denver's 6 in the poll, 1 spot ahead of Maryland. I don't hate it. Again, I'm going to bet that the Maryland performance and the game plan left a bad taste in some people's mouths. So, you know, maybe they felt, all right, they lost, but I'm also going to punish you a little bit for playing that way and all that and drop you further. But Denver beat Providence this week with some smothering defense of their own. They got really good goalie play from Clayman. And the Friars, I will say, Providence is not an easy out right now. They're playing well down the stretch. Denver, I think, has locked up the Big East regular season crown. They could lose to Marquette this week, and the Hoyas could beat Villanova. But since Denver owns the head-to-head, I believe Denver has locked up regular season champ of the Big East. So the Pios, I think, are like 4 in the RPI. I think they have a top 5 RPI. I got to go back and check. Some of this I was doing ahead of time, and it might have been updated and changed. But they have a great RPI, so there's no world to me where Denver doesn't make the tournament. 8, I have Yale. Yale beat Hofstra and Albany this past week. Matt Brandeis' insane scoring pace rolls onward. He is 1 point back of Rob Pinnell for the most in Ivy League history. Rob has 354. He's 2 goals back from Dylan Malloy for career goals in the Ivies. Assists, he's a long way off from the all-time leaders in Ivy League history. He is 4 back from Ryan Boyle for 6th all-time. If he makes a really big run here and gets a lot of games, he could maybe catch Kevin Lowe or Michael Sowers at 4th and 3rd. But I'm going to guess that Darren Lowe and Rob Pinnell remain the only 2 Ivy League players ever with 200-plus assists. I think Brandeis got to put up another like 40 the rest of the season, which, I mean, at his pace, maybe. I don't know. Never say never with this kid right now. But Yale came in at number 9 in the poll, so 1 spot back of where I have him. I think that's also where they are in the RPI. Yale can still host the Ivy League tournament. They need to beat Princeton this weekend, and then the big part of it is they need Dartmouth to beat Cornell. I don't know. Host or not, their spot in the tournament is locked up. It feels like we would have to see some absolutely incredible levels of bid thieving from conference champions out there for Yale to miss the tournament. Yale's another team I feel is pretty safely in. You know, maybe if you get like a you know, Rutgers wins the Big Ten and Brown wins the Ivy League tournament and you know, all a whole bunch of down the line you know, Loyola wins the Patriot League or whatever, even though that's probably a one-bid league anyway. I don't know. I got to get into it, but I don't think Yale's missing the tournament. At number nine, Cornell. So I have them here at nine. The final poll has them at eight, so I flipped them and Yale, basically. I think their RPI is also eight. They bounced back this week, a good convincing win over Harvard. Cornell just has to beat Dartmouth again to host the Ivy League tournament. The Big Green do not have an Ivy League win yet. Cornell will be a heavy favorite. If both Yale and Cornell win, they're both 5-1, but Cornell's head-to-head gives them the tiebreak, so Cornell will host. Crazier things have happened, I guess, but Michael Long's excellent season rolls onward. That's right. I did not lead with CJ Kirst. I led with Michael Long, who is the Cornell leading scorer right now. He has 34 assists this year. If he's available for teams this summer, he should be wearing a PLL jersey this summer. Michael Long is really good. Number 10, I have Penn State. This match is where they came in the final poll. I believe they sit at 9 in the RPI. They are the 3 seed in the Big Ten tournament. They beat Rutgers this week. That's basically a warm-up game for the Big Ten tournament for them, because I think they play Rutgers again here in the first round. Penn State's looming to me as a team that can do what they did last year, match up well with teams, and just make a postseason run. All the tools are there. All the tools are there for them. Even if they lose to Rutgers, I think they have a great shot of the bid. The losses are Maryland, Hop, and then the ugly Colgate one to start the year. But I think I can see Big Ten getting 3 teams in. I don't know. RPI numbers are crazy. The committee, mad scientists, I tell you. Number 11, I have Georgetown, the Hoyas at 11, holding where they were from last week. The same in the media poll. RPI-wise, I think they're also 11 there. They took care of business against St. John's. I think they got every goalie on the roster in the game, which is always good to see. They play Villanova to close the year in a game that is but also isn't meaningless. I mean, seeding in the Big East tournament, I guess, is at stake. I think if Nova wins, both teams are 3-2, and then Nova has the head-to-head. So Nova would be the 2 seed and Georgetown 3. But that said, it's a 4-team tournament, so either way, they're playing each other. I think it only really gets wild if Providence wins and Nova loses, and then Georgetown, I think, would play Providence, but it would be a stunner if it didn't come down to Georgetown and Denver in this conference anyway. Let's just be frank about that. And probably both make the tournament anyway, but hey, that's why we play the games. Army at 12 for me. Like Georgetown, Army took care of business. They hold where they were a week ago and in the poll. Their RPI is 13. I really don't think their RPI is going to end in a place that's good enough for them to get an at-large. As we said, Patriot League, the scenarios are an absolute rat's nest, but we will sort those out and we'll put something up on the sticksandlacrosse.com site this week so you can kind of try and figure out whichever team you like, how they can get to where you want them to go. Number 13, I have Towson. I have Towson all the way up here, probably higher than most. I think they're in great form right now, ahead of Richmond, ahead of St. Joe's. If you want to say I should have Princeton back up here after their win, all right. Does a win over Penn really do that much for you? I don't know. Maybe. I wasn't all that convinced. Towson has an RPI of 22. The CAA is a one-bid league. But they play Delaware this week. CAA regular season supremacy will be on the line. That's a great game. At number 14, I have St. Joe's. The Hawks blew out the Bonnies. Not exactly a surprising result. They're 16 in the RPI. They also came in at 16 in the final poll. They have an A-10 showdown with Richmond this weekend. That will be for A-10 supremacy. I love these mid-major games at the end of the year to decide the regular season conference champ. There's a bunch of them. Just about every conference, honestly, I feel like has one of these coming. CAA's got one. A-10's got one. It's going to be good. At number 15, I have Richmond. They're 14 in the final poll. They have an RPI, I believe, of 23. Because they're handling these teams that are not as good as them. They're beating up on the lower-level teams in their schedule. And then they're battling with the good teams, but losing. And the RPI just cares that you lost. So Richmond, obviously, you know, by a lot of metrics, their efficiency metrics and everything, they're great. But their RPI is going to be weak. They need to win the A-10. At 16, I have Princeton. They came in at 13. I didn't bump them up that high for beating Penn. I just don't. Maybe it's because I don't really rate Penn right now all that much. But So I have Princeton here off of that. I mean, I didn't want to totally forget about the fact that they lost to Lafayette. or they lost to Brown. Princeton is playing playoff games already. They technically could lose this week and still make the Ivy League tournament. A win, I believe, locks up their Ivy League tournament spot. They need to win the Ivy League tournament to make the NCAA tournament. They'll have an RPI of 15. Without an Ivy League tournament win, they ain't in. So Princeton's playing playoff games already. Penn, basically the same. This matches where they are in the final poll here at 17, where I have them and where they came in. They have the Ivy League tournament spot locked up. They went 4-2 in conference. Penn's done with regular season games. So they have their tournament spot for the conference tournament set. At this point, again, I imagine they will need to probably win it to get into the big dance. Their RPI is 12. You know, maybe you start looking at an interesting bubble case if it comes down to it. But at the end of the day, their losses are Georgetown, Yale, and Princeton. That's not a great set of losses to have if you're trying to get in off the bubble. Especially if Denver wins the Big East. Penn's idle this week, so they get to watch the other Ivies bash each other for position here. Cheer for the matchup they want. If I have to bet here, though, Penn's Ivy League tournament or bust, and I don't know who I would want to play if I was Penn. Nobody in the Ivy League is easy. So, Penn at 17. 18, I have Delaware. Matches the final poll spot for them. We're kind of reaching that time of year where everyone remembers that Delaware can be dangerous because they have like a couple of pros on the roster, basically. They have an RPI of 30. Who cares? The CAA has always been a one-bid league. Their date, as we said, with Towson is looming, playing for the regular season CAA crown. Tune into that one because Mike Robinson, I bet you, gets drafted. I have a feeling Mike Robinson's getting drafted. If he doesn't get drafted, he's going to be a steal for somebody after the draft. Number 19, I have Harvard. Crimson did not stay in the final poll. They dropped out. They're in the receiving votes category. But I have them here at 19. I could be reaching a little bit. If you want to say I am, I don't blame you. That's fine. I'm used to that kind of thing. Particularly at the bottom of the poll. This is where I tend to be a much different. But they lost to Cornell this weekend, which is basically a season ender. They can't make the Ivy League tournament at this point, I don't believe, which means they won't go to the NCAA tournament. The best things they can do this weekend, I think they can spoil things for Brown. Bruno can still make the Ivy League tournament if they win. I know the overall record for Brown is not good, but in conference, a win keeps them in the mix. They need help, but a Brown win keeps them in the mix. So Harvard can play with the motivation of keeping Brown on the couch after this weekend. I will say, this Harvard team, man, they ain't going anywhere. They have three seniors on the team that have scored a point this year. Three. Everybody else is back next year. One of those three is their goalie. It's Christian Barnard, who scored a goal this year. Sam King is a monster in the making. Sam King is unbelievable. Jacksonville is my number 20 team. Again, they did not get ranked in the final poll. They were in receiving votes. They received a vote from me. They beat Air Force this weekend in OT, so they moved to the top of the A-Sun standings. Again, the A-Sun, like these other conferences, is coming down to the last week of the season. There's three teams at 7-1. That's another one with... I'll have to get the scenarios out for folks, but four straight wins for Jacksonville. A date with Bellarmine looms to close the season. They're a good team right now. They're really good. They're hot right now. They have lost once since March started. I think they're going to give a hell of a run to somebody in the NCAA tournament if they make it. They'll scare somebody. The coaching, the talent on this team is good. I think Chris Darminio is sneaky, maybe a pro-level LSM. Maybe. Maybe a pro? The Finns have an RPI of 37. Again, doesn't matter. ASUN, AQ, or bust. And again, they were unranked in the final poll. They were receiving votes. Teams that got votes in the poll, yet again, there's a lot of them. So I'm just going to go through all of them, and I'll tell you whether or not I really considered voting for these teams. But I will say, it's such a good thing when you have these receiving votes category with like 10 teams in it. Because it tells you how many teams people think are playing top 20 level lacrosse. And this time of year, with conference tournaments coming, it means this is going to be a really fun time for a couple weeks. So I love seeing the loaded, also receiving votes thing. Harvard was in receiving votes. I ranked them, as we said. The team that appeared in the poll where I put Harvard is Michigan. Michigan came in at 19 in the poll this week. They were a team I definitely considered voting for. They beat Ohio State. I think Harvard, despite the recent poor run for them, I still think they're a better team than Michigan. I think if they played Michigan today, I'd pick Harvard. So the Crimson I kept in. Michigan has an RPI of 16. They are a bid thief at best right now. If they can win the Big Ten tournament, big if. That's a tough one. But if they can do it, they can bid thief it for sure. Loyola got votes. I did not really think about voting for Loyola. They beat Navy this week. So I guess it's decent, but it's their fifth straight. So they're hot. I mean, they closed the regular season with Army this week. That'll be big for them. We'll get into the Patriot League logjam, as I said. As good as they've been, I don't think they're a top 20 team. I can count 20 teams out that I think are better than them. So the Georgetown win, I know it's great, but it's also, it feels like it's years ago at this point. But Jacksonville, as we mentioned, I put Jacksonville in the top 20. The team that was in the poll where I had Jacksonville was Colgate. Colgate got the number 20 spot. I probably had Colgate as like my 21st team this week, maybe. Another Patriot League logjam team. I think whipping Holy Cross doesn't do as much for me as Jacksonville knocking off Air Force did. So I gave the spot to Jacksonville, but it was close. It was close. I think Colgate is a deserving top 20 team. Sacred Heart, the Shoe, they won again this week, locking up top spot in the MAC tournament, which they host. They didn't cover, which doesn't matter, but I mention it because it's the first time that's happened, I think, in 9 games. They are a very worthy inclusion in the top 20. They are good. They're really good. They are playing with a ton of confidence. If you haven't watched a Sacred Heart game in a while, I'm telling you, if you want to watch a team that you can tell from the way they walk onto the field, truly believes they are going to win every game, watch Sacred Heart right now. Albany, I did not think to put Albany in. They got votes. They lost to Yale pretty convincingly, and then they beat Merrimack, which really doesn't do a ton for me at all. Look, like, Albany is a sub-500 team. They're 6-7. They have players that I love to watch. Love to watch Pisano. Love to watch Silas Richmond. You know, Grayton Hogg. These guys are great players who I have are worth buying a ticket to go see. But at the end of the day, I'm not ranking them. I'm ranking the team. And it's a sub-500 team that is just, they're not one of the 20 best teams in America right now. Villanova got votes. I didn't really consider Nova for the top 20. This week's win didn't do a ton to change my mind, I guess. They beat Marquette. There's some rumors starting to swirl around Marquette about possible, you know, changes there after the season. They have Georgetown next. They win there, and I'll rank the Cats, but I did not really consider Villanova this week. And the Utes. Utah has won 6 straight. They got votes. ASUN play, as I said, has been great. I think I was basically coming down to one of those three teams at the top of the ASUN, Jacksonville, Utah, and Air Force for my like 20-ish spot, them in the mix with Colgate. I put Jacksonville in because I think they're the better team for me right now. I know Utah has a head-to-head, but I think I like Jacksonville more today. I don't have room for 2 ASUN squads in the top 20. Sorry, guys. I think the conference comes down to those three teams, to Utah, Jacksonville, and Air Force, and we have 1 week left to sort out that seeding. So look, again, I will have seeding scenarios and stuff for conference tournament on sticksandlacrosse.com this week. Just keep an eye out for those. It's that time of year where things just get crazy with that. So that is the top 20. That's everybody who got votes, who got ranked, where I ranked them. The NLL playoffs start this weekend. It's been such a fun time for lacrosse. I love April. That's going to be it for today, though. I hope you enjoyed. Thank you again for coming back and for sticking around with me. And we will see you next time. Take care.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.